Welcome back, everybody, to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Davey Siegel. Y'all know the drill by now. Going to talk a lot of NASCAR on this here show, and we finally have not only a race to preview, but also a race to recap, and it's the granddaddy of them all, the Daytona 500. Michael McDowell, you see that coming? If you did, I don't believe you. We're going to have Kyle Suze on to chat about that. Austin Cindric, Xfinity Series winner this week and reigning champion, on to talk about that and more. And it all happens right here on the Front Stretch Pod. Let's get started.
Buggity, buggity, buggity. Let's go racing, boys.
Let's drop the green and talk about this year's Daytona 500 with the man, the myth, the legend, my boy, Kyle Suze. First of all, really upset that I just didn't see you at all this past week. And we were in the same state at the same venue, I guess only for one day, because you were at New Smyrna for every single night. But still, I mean, I miss you, man.
Yeah, I know. I miss you, too. Unfortunately, the way the COVID thing kind of worked, you were in the infield. I was in the press box. We weren't even able to hang out together. But I think the cooler thing about this whole experience is we still got to experience the Daytona 500 and see what it's all about. I mean, we've both done it before, but this is such a prestigious event in sports, never mind in racing, and it's so cool to be able to do it again this year.
What did you feel the vibe was on Sunday when you were at the track? Because I just felt that it was different because there was obviously not as many fans there and not as much going on, but it just felt different. It wasn't good, it wasn't bad, it was just different.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was the fan base not being there. I mean, there's 30,000 people. It really doesn't, and I watched from the press box, it really didn't seem like a lot of people. 100,000 people, and the atmosphere that you get on Daytona 500 morning is way different. But I drove down the strip out in front of the track at 45 miles an hour at 10:30 on Daytona 500 day. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
So it's just a different feeling without the fans there. And what was kind of bizarre to me was looking down on pit road 10, 15 minutes before the invocation.
And there's just nobody there.
Yeah, just no people. That is way, and that was probably my 16th straight Daytona 500.
Wow.
Shocking to just look at that and see, I guess the era we live in is just different.
I think I was just doing math in my head. I think this is my 11th or 12th in a row because my first one was 2010. But this is like nothing I've experienced before. And I will say it had some semblance of normalcy when I was watching the start of the race on the top of the fan zone because there was a lot of fans there. And you could hear the fans obviously right next to you cheering, and you could kind of hear them in the stands, but it just was really weird and different because, like you said, race day morning, you get up early, you go to the track, you're feeling the vibe, you're walking around pit road, there's a pre-race concert with everybody screaming, hooting, and hollering, driver intros are like nothing you've ever seen before, and we didn't have any of that this year, so it was just a different vibe. But I'll tell you what, somebody who could not give a flying you-know-what about the vibe is the race winner, Michael McDowell. He gets her done in his 358th career Cup Series start. How do you like them apples? I said that it wasn't a shock, but it was a surprise because we know McDowell's good on these super speedway races, but I don't think anybody really expected him to actually win the race, and I know you didn't either.
Yeah, if you look at the 40 drivers in the field, I think you got 10 to 12 that you feel really confident about that they have a chance. There's another 10 to 12 that are like, you know, they could happen. He's probably in that second group as a guy that's got good super speedway experience and is competitive and seems to be there at the end. But honestly, even when they took the white flag, I didn't feel like he was the guy that was going to win the race. I didn't really feel like he was the guy that was going to win the race until, I guess I call it the Red Sea parted, when Logano goes low, Keselowski goes high, and he's there. And even then, if the field comes all the way back to the start-finish line without a yellow, he probably still doesn't win. So I'm not saying he got lucky. He's in the right place at the right time. But I'm not totally surprised either, like you said. I mean, he's a great super speedway racer. And honestly, talking with him Sunday night, listening to the Zoom with the press conference, and then being there Monday morning when they had a little celebration for his Daytona 500 win, he's honestly one of the most down-to-earth guys I think I've ever talked to in my life. He's so honest. Trust in his faith, and I don't think there's any better Daytona 500 winner, especially this year during COVID with everything that's going on. I feel like he was the right guy to win it.
That's something I wanted to ask you about because he's a man of deep faith. We know that, and he's been a journeyman driver, to put it nicely. I mean, he's been kicked around to the curb a time or two, starting parked for a handful of years, got rushed up the developmental ranks with MWR. But he repeatedly said in his post-race pressers that went into the wee hours of the morning that he always knew he would win. And he said, I know it sounds crazy. My wife told me that I was wrong. But every single time that I go to the racetrack, I think I'm going to win. And I wasn't sure if he was talking about, you know, a random race at Atlanta or only Talladega and Daytona. But he really had the confidence in himself all these years that he was going to win a race one of these days. Do you believe him? Because I have a little bit of trouble doing that.
I believe that he had the confidence to do it himself. But I think the reality is, and he kind of hinted towards this Monday. I mean, any race car driver should feel like they can win every race they get in, or it's kind of useless to even go out there. But I feel like he knows Daytona, Talladega, and I would throw the road courses in there too.
For sure. He's really good there.
Yeah, he's great on the road courses. I think at those tracks, he really does feel like he can win. And he's run well at these. This is not new at Daytona. It's really not new at Talladega either. But I don't know. Everybody wakes up on Daytona 500 Sunday and feels like they can win the race, I think. If they don't, well, they really don't belong out there. But McDowell's one of those guys that he really does trust in his faith, man. He believed he was going to do it. And I heard Bob Junkins the morning after say that he felt like that morning he had a weird vibe that they were going to win too. He kind of went in the hall that morning and told everybody, hey, we're going to win. So I don't know. I guess faith worked out for Michael McDowell this time, but also Front Row's come a long way with their equipment.
They have.
This is not, you know, this is not a bottom rung race team. They've come a long way. They've got good supporters. They've got good people working in the shop. And Drew Bickenstaffer is really probably one of the best crew chiefs in the garage. It's pretty underrated, in my opinion, what he can do.
It's so low-key. Drew Bickenstaffer has 4 career wins in his Cup Series tenure. 3 of them are at Daytona. 2 of them are in the 500. And I knew that he won the one before in 2012, I think it was, with Kenseth. But I didn't know that that was his first ever race as a crew chief. I mean, can you imagine your first time as a crew chief winning the Daytona 500? That's insane. So I see where you're coming from with that, but something's just hard to believe for me that even though he went through all these trials and tribulations, he still had the faith and the confidence. But, I mean, hey, like, more power to him, because you got to have a lot of self-confidence in that to be through or to go through what he went through and still have the utmost confidence to say, like, I know I can do it. I just need to put myself in the right place, be there at the right time. And that's exactly what happened, like you said, when the seas parted. When I realized that he was going to win, it wasn't when the seas parted. It was when the caution came out and I was like, I looked on the TV screens because I couldn't see the track. And I was like, was Chase ahead? And then I saw that McDowell was at that point, and I said, no way. McDowell, are you serious? And it happened. But let me ask you about the race overall, Kyle, because with the rain delay, which we'll get to in a little bit, the vibe changed after we came back from the delay, because after the big one on lap 15, that took out 16 top quality cars. And Denny Hamlin pretty much said afterwards that, you know, you dwindle the field by that many, everybody left thinks they have a chance to win, so they want to save their stuff. So that's why you had a single file freight train. Everybody's just riding around for the next, I don't know, 150, 60 laps. It wasn't the greatest Daytona 500 ever. I don't think that we were expecting it to be. I mean, it would have been great if it was, but this race just lacked a little bit of that for me, but it was to be expected after that lap 15 big one, don't you think?
I mean, I think the whole vibe of the whole day changed at lap 15. I mean, we knew the weather was close. It was obvious that you could look in the sky and see that it was about to rain. Mm-hmm. And when it started crashing and you see 16 cars or however many cars crashing at the bottom of the track, to me, it deflated the whole race. Right from there, I was deflated. I mean, you see cars spinning and you hope that some of them are going to be able to continue. But when 80% of those 16 cars get towed off the track on a tow truck, ending their day, deflates the whole race. Then it rains. And honestly, I don't know about you, but for a long time, I was convinced we were coming back on Monday. I was convinced we were getting a Monday afternoon day.
My butt was puckered real tight because I did not want to have to rebook all my stuff. I'm so glad we got it in.
I was convinced, and I knew, like, I'm here in Daytona.
I know you were. You were texting me, and you were like, oh, we're coming back. I'm like, shut up, Kyle.
I know I had a bad feeling with the way the weather looked, and it rained hard. It was flooded there. Like, there was absolute puddles of rain. The grass was flooded from earlier in the week and had flooded that day again. I didn't think it was going to happen, but then typical Daytona 500 kind of feel, when we got back in the press box and got back, like, with the cars fired up and the cars rolling on the track, the atmosphere to me was better then than it was at the beginning of the race at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was just a weird kind of feeling.
Not for the people watching on TV, I'm sure, not for the Fox execs, but I can feel that. And I think part of it for me was I was just honestly, at a personal level, so happy that I wasn't going to miss it on Monday and I didn't have to rebook my stuff. But I was jacked up. I was like, we are going back. The drivers are walking to the cars. Let's go. I was real hype about that. One more thing on this race, Kyle, and then we'll get to our interview with Austin Cindric, the reigning Xfinity champ and Daytona Xfinity winner as well. What does this do for Front Row Motorsports? Because now they're in the playoffs. They can't finish worse than 16th in the standings. From a pure financial perspective, this is huge for them because they've never finished this high in the standings. And I'm not saying that McDowell can advance past the round of 16. I think that'd be ridiculous to say. But I am saying that there's a road course in the playoffs. Jeff Gluck brought this point up on the teardown. And once you get eliminated, you're not just going to finish 16th. You can finish anywhere besides the top four. So he could win another race. I mean, it's not out of the question. I think from a pure financial perspective, this is big for Front Row. And as an organization overall, to be included in that 16-car field from a branding sponsorship perspective, it's really, really valuable.
I think the 2021 value to this is, in my opinion, is kind of short-term. I think the hype that they're going to get from winning the Daytona 500 is great. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. They're probably not going to make it out of the first round of the playoffs. There are a bunch of road courses this year, so there is a possibility that Michael McDowell picks up a second win before we even get.
He'll get two in a row this weekend.
It is realistically possible. But in my opinion, this is bigger for Front Row Motorsports next year. When that next-gen car comes out, they're going to stack up this kind of financial backing. I heard the car owner on SiriusXM the morning after the Daytona 500 kind of mentioned that we're going to start shifting to 2022 at some point, and this is going to help us prepare ourselves for the future. And that new car is hopefully going to equal the playing field a little bit more in the field in general. But let's face it, they're not a top-tier team. They're probably in that second tier of race teams. This is going to help them, I think, going forward to maybe jump up a little bit, gain that perspective of what it's like to be a topper, a higher team in the echelon of motorsports. And, you know, obviously it'd be nice to be in the playoffs. Maybe they'll get lucky and they'll get to the next round. You never know. But Michael McDowell is a really good driver. Don't take that away from him. You know, just because the race team's a little bit underfunded or they're looking for better equipment, Michael McDowell is a hell of a driver. And that to me tells me that with all these road courses we're having going on, it wouldn't shock me if he's up there at least in the top five here for a couple times the rest of the year.
All right, Kyle, hang around for a little bit. Let's get our stage break out of the way. We'll talk to Austin Cindric and let's come back and we'll talk about the Daytona road course. What do you say?
All right, sounds good to me.
This week's stage break is brought to you by, for the third week in a row, nobody yet, but I'm telling you, our sales manager at Front Stretch, Kevin Deedy, is working hard to secure some sponsorship for the Front Stretch podcast. Advertising is as wide open as Michael McDowell was on the accelerator going into turn three when the Red Seas parted. Hopefully that was a joke that you guys got. But advertising is open here on the podcast. Contact Kevin Deedy. His email is ddk37, that's DEADYK37, at gmail.com. If you'd like to associate your brand to this wonderful podcast, to have great puns like Michael McDowell being flat wide open, as well as this slot of the show, contact Kevin Deedy, DEADYK37, at gmail.com. Let's throw it over to our chat with Xfinity Series reigning champion, Austin Cindric, and also most recent winner in Xfinity overall, got the first win for Team Penske at Daytona International Speedway on the big track this past weekend. It was great to catch up with Austin. We had some fun jokes about beef because, if you don't know, it's what's for dinner. Talked about his hat. He had a nice hat post-race in his media availabilities. And let's see what he can do the rest of the year in Xfinity and the Cup Series because he's going to make some limited starts as well. So here it is, my chat with Austin Cindric. Really privileged to have on this week on the Front Stretch Podcast, reigning Xfinity Series champ and Daytona Xfinity winner, Austin Cindric. I think I would be remiss if I didn't start with asking, is beef still what's for dinner?
Beef is definitely what's for dinner. We got all the beef on Saturday night, so that was pretty cool. They had a whole cooler full of tomahawk steaks, and those guys are going to hook us up. So that was pretty cool. Obviously, great to win the first race of the year and check off a box, winning a race on a super speedway. So pretty special. Great way to start the year.
How many times have you had beef since you won?
I had steak and shake for dinner the night after. I figured that was the right thing to do.
It's appropriate.
It was very appropriate. They gave me a belt buckle and a cowboy hat and a trophy. I wore the belt buckle into the Cup garage the next morning. definitely trying to embrace it as much as possible.
I was going
to
ask about that cowboy hat under your regular hat look, because I asked you about it post-race as well. You've done it twice. I mean, it's worked both times. Why change it?
I guess I got to have more races with cowboy hats because we keep winning them. So it's good stuff, man. It's pretty cool, especially when you get a race sponsor and engaged like that. So definitely fun stuff, and hopefully we can keep going.
Probably one of the weirdest 24-hour stretches for you personally and professionally. You go from winning the Xfinity race, accomplishing history there for yourself, which we'll get to, and Team Penske as well, to strapping in for the Great American Race, the biggest race probably of your entire life. And that all happened in less than a day span, or I guess more than a day when you factor in the rain delay. Just that day as a whole, I mean, little Austin probably had to be pinching himself seeing what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, I had to switch my mind off in a lot of different ways. You know, after the Xfinity race, I wanted to enjoy it as much as possible because that's a big deal. I mean, those tracks are pretty hard to win on. And that experience, obviously starting off the year that well, and the hard work in the off season for the team really paying off. So I'm very proud of that. I thought I took advantage of that and enjoyed it as much as I could. And by the time I did that, went over and saw all the big wigs from the team, you know, across the street, and it was 11:45. I still hadn't had dinner. I still needed to prepare for the Daytona 500. Yeah. I needed to hydrate. I needed to sleep. I needed to wake up early in the morning. So I had to shut my phone off because I had so many text messages and so many nice notes. I'm still not done getting to them. because the 500 added more. Yeah. Then from there, I mean, just trying to prepare as much as possible. In some ways, the rain delay was nice because I got to take a good 2 hour and a half.
Nice.
And and get prepared for obviously like you said, a really important event for me.
So your wonderful PR representative Jess actually told me about this impressive stat that you now have. I think you're the only driver to win a race at Daytona on the super speedway, on the road course, and in rallycross. I think you're the only one, because I don't really know a lot of people that have had success in all those different disciplines. You're a jack of all trades, Austin.
Yeah, it's a very cool stat. It's something that I'm very proud of because my racing career has taken me in a lot of different directions and a lot of different types of race cars. And obviously I've gotten to do a lot of that in Daytona.
Yeah.
It's obviously a very versatile facility, but it's cool to be able to showcase that because I feel like that is what has been setting me apart in my career. I've had great opportunities to do those things and obviously take advantage of them.
So I mentioned those different disciplines. Those are really important. Not a lot of people take advantage by going to Scandinavian countries and racing on ice, but you do. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and getting really, really cold while also warming up with a race car?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I went up to Sweden. They've got an ice racing series they do with Rallycross, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was in the same car that I would have driven at Daytona, same type of car, just obviously on a frozen surface with spiked tires and the middle of winter. I mean, we were closer to the North Pole than we were to continental Europe. So,
man,
that was definitely cold for me. Living in North Carolina, we don't get much colder than you know, 20 degrees during the winter. So I was like below 40. So definitely an interesting experience. I had fun. I mean, we had I had pace out there, and I really enjoyed it. I won one of my heat races, but
nice.
I did learn that snowbanks are a lot harder than they look. You know, they're not very soft. definitely a lesson there, but yeah, really cool experience. I'd love to definitely do some of that again.
Was it actually negative 40 degrees?
It was cold. It was really cold. And like the time that the sun was out was so small. Like the sun would come up at like 11 in the morning and set at like 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's like you have that much daylight. So you're working on the car and doing all this other stuff while it's still dark out. So
that's wild.
I mean, it's really cold. Sun makes things warmer, and when you don't have it, it's really cold.
Well, I would imagine that the snowbanks are pretty much like concrete because when it's that cold, there's no sunlight to melt it or soften it even a little bit. I mean, that is literally just like a concrete wall probably when you're hitting it.
Yeah, I mean, it's narrow. It's hard to go too wide on some of those racetracks.
Yeah, for sure.
The way you pass people is getting a nose in there and pretty much just shoving into a snowbank. For being the only American guy there, I got shoved into a snowbank quite a few times. So it was, like I said, it was a great experience. I also learned there's a strategy on what color your car needs to be, because when you're behind somebody in the ice and the snow, obviously you kick up a lot of snow and ice rooster tails, and it's really hard to see. Well, all these guys, they all had pretty much white cars, and they're really hard to see behind. Yeah. So you had no idea where you were going. Well, I had a bright red car, and everyone could see really well behind me. So definitely a strategy to having a white car if you're racing on ice.
Probably not too great that, you were an American, so you were going to get hazed with the foreigners, and then B, everybody knew where you were, clear as day, even in the nighttime.
Got the target on me.
You got a lot of nice stuff in the background there. Is any of that from what you did in Sweden, or is this all Americanized racing paraphernalia?
Yeah, so over in the corner over here is some of the rallycross stuff, but okay. I need more shelves. That's a good problem to have.
Good problem to have, yes.
After last year, so we'll keep going. That's, like I said, a great problem to have. A lot of different stuff between. I mean, on that side, it's more sports cars and open wheel. Yeah. Definitely try and keep on adding to it.
Jess also told me that you are the first defending champion in the Xfinity Series to win the season opener at Daytona since big old Randy LaJoie did it in 1996-97. And I'm going to quiz you. Do you know what he did in the year following trying to defend his title? Do you happen to know?
I do not.
He won the title again.
Okay, well, let's do it.
You're off to a good start, man. So why was winning on a super speedway for you really important this season? Because you mentioned that in the post-race presser, and you kind of touched on it in the sense of people labeled you last year as this guy that can only win on road courses. You dispelled that myth pretty darn quickly, and you did it again this year, accomplishing one of your main goals, winning on a super speedway. Can you tell us why that was important to you personally?
Yeah, other than the fact that, you know, the biggest race at NASCAR is super speedway racing, it's Daytona 500. Obviously, mm-hmm. I got to be part of that this weekend, and it's the last type of racetrack that I haven't won on in NASCAR. And I mean, we've talked about just now, like, the versatility in my career and the pride that I take in that. And the cool thing about NASCAR racing is that we've got all these different types of racetracks, and to use some of that experience as far as being versatile and apply it and be successful at it is something, like I said, I take a lot of pride in. And,
yeah,
you know, last step for me and kind of checking all those boxes was a super speedway. And that was kind of an extracurricular goal for me this season. Obviously focuses on playoffs and Final Four, but past that, it was really cool to get that done early.
And this is your first start in the Daytona 500, the Great American Race, nothing like it. I wish for you that you could have experienced it with all the fanfare and a full grandstands there, because I'm sure the vibes would have felt a little bit different and a little bit bigger. But with that being said, I mean, there's still 30,000 people there. It's still the freaking Daytona 500. You're still in the race. So what were the vibes like? Could you tell that this was a bigger deal?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I've watched the race. I've been to the 500 in person and as a fan. And to be part of it was really cool. Obviously, yeah. Making the race was a big challenge for us heading in the weekend. So I definitely felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders at that point. And after that, we had a 1-in-40 shot of winning the Great American Race. And after lap 15, we had about a 1-in-25 shot. So it was a great experience for me. And obviously, it was cool to lead some laps and be able to be a factor a lot of the race. So I'm looking forward to the next opportunity like that. It was a great taste of a race in the Cup Series. Obviously, it's a different discipline than most mm-hmm. of the races in the year. But, excited for what's next.
Yeah, not a lot of people can say that they've led a lap in their first start in Cup. So it's an exclusive club to be a part of. Could you tell the difference with the competition around you in the Cup Series compared to Xfinity, or being that it was Daytona and the nature of this race specifically, it was a lot of riding around, was it kind of hard to tell?
No, I mean, I think the first laps I had in the duels, you could tell mm-hmm. there's a difference. I mean, you'd expect there to be, right? I mean, these guys are 20 to 25 of the best drivers in the sport, you know, in some really great equipment. So the decision making and the way the race plays out and in some ways the predictability of what's going on around you, you can trust those guys a lot more because you know that they're going to do it perfect, and it's about who can be the best, not just who's doing it right. So there's a difference, but at the same time, and there's a lot of great drivers in the Xfinity Series, especially this year. So I feel like it's not a difference of, you know, who's better. It's just there's such a large pool of great drivers in that series. So it makes it fun. It makes you want to step your game up as a competitor, and it makes me excited for the next race.
I got to bring up the picture you tweeted, I think at this point, probably a few hours ago, of you and Kaz. That made me that made me chuckle. I'm still chuckling now. I mean, I didn't know that that's how you looked when you were a young kid. You tried to recreate it, and you didn't really, like, know what to do. So you looked a little bit, like, meaner and, like, muggier now than you did back then. But you're those are some pretty rosy cheeks, I got to say. I have rosacea, so I understand. But, I mean, that was something else, I got to say. That gave me a chuckle, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. No, it's cool. I mean, it's especially cool that Kaz and I have been able to move up through the ranks in NASCAR. Obviously, we started our first Daytona 500 together. We were teammates when we both started racing in Bandoleros. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we go a long ways back. So that was special, obviously, for a lot of different reasons for both of us. And, like I said, I tried to recreate it. I didn't quite nail it. You know, I definitely thought I remembered myself looking more casual in the photo than Kaz. Yeah. He's, you know, very upright. He's got his hands on his hips. He's, you know, smiling in the photo, and I'm kind of just like hanging out, you know, ready to go. But, it doesn't seem like that long ago, which is the crazy thing. So I'm very fortunate to be here, and obviously want to do my best to try and stay here.
Well, that was for the last row of the 500. So in the coming years, when you guys inevitably qualify in the front row, you can recreate it for a third time. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Cool. I want to ask about something. Kaz was on fire in the 500. You weren't necessarily on fire, but you had that last lap crash, which involved a lot of fire. And you were telling a group of media earlier today that crash actually had like a pretty big-ish impact on you and your car specifically, but you're feeling all good now. You're getting some PT.
Yeah, no, I'm all good. Just stiff, pretty big impact, obviously. Yeah. Not much time to slow down. And, the fire is probably a little separate. The fire is more of a distraction when I'm in the car. But they make safe cars, and I'm lucky to get to drive them. So no worries there. But I tweeted out. I mean, fire's hot. I mean, I wasn't trying to be smart.
Like, breaking news.
It's powerful stuff, man. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to describe the not the effect that it has, but how real it is. So that was I wouldn't say it was a game changer for me, but definitely gave me some perspective on things I've watched as a kid and never gotten to experience.
Yeah, it could be jarring for sure, but glad you're all right with that. I'll close with asking about the season as a whole, Austin, because you have a few more Cup Series races on your schedule. You obviously are going for back-to-back titles in the Xfinity Series, trying to do something that Tyler Reddick did a couple years back as well. You're already the champion of the series, so what do you want to learn this year? What do you want to accomplish this year? Because on paper, people may say you're cup ready. You've already accomplished and done all that you needed to do, but I'm sure internally you have a little bit more different goals set in mind.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we can't stray too far away from the challenges that making it to the Final Four and being competitive in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said before, it's a very competitive series. There's very competitive drivers with very competitive cars. So we got to continually step up our game. But as far as my goals outside of that for this year, I think they'll change as I get more perspective on what it means to race in the Cup Series. And I would say that schedule is probably going to be more front loaded than back loaded, obviously, because of the playoffs and focus towards the Xfinity Series. But I think the more I learn about what my strengths and weaknesses are on Sundays, I can try and apply that to Saturdays and make myself better in an environment that I probably know more about and that has more constant values. So I'm excited to learn those things. I'm open-minded to what I can improve on. And obviously there's some racetracks that I felt like we had really great shots of winning at last year that we came up short for whatever reason. So there's definitely a fire burning for some of those places, whether it be Bristol or Pocono or Atlanta or Indy or wherever else that we feel like we should have won last year, I'm excited to go back and give it another swing.
Hopefully you can get some cowboy hats along the way too, because those seem to jive with you. Well, Austin, this has been fun, man. Thanks for taking some time. I appreciate it. Congrats on the victory at Daytona. Congrats on a great run at Daytona. Thank God you're safe. Everything's all good there. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon down the road, hopefully in victory lane.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yep, no problem. Thank you. White flag is out on the front stretch pod. Welcome back, Kyle Souza, to preview the Daytona road course as he's waving the white flag for you audio listeners that can't see.
I do that in real life,
yeah,
too.
I'm not, you are a flag man.
Member. I do that in real life, too.
So let's preview the Daytona road course this weekend, Kyle. Rain will not be an issue this weekend, thankfully, because we got rain tires for road course racing. But that brings me to a topic, just real quick, I want to get your thoughts on with the 500. Do you think the time of the race beginning should change? That's been a big topic of conversation this week. You obviously are still in northern central Florida, wherever Daytona is, and you understand the weather. What do you think?
This is a tough debate that I think everybody I've seen on Twitter is on the 1 p.m. aspect, and I'm there too. I think 1 p.m. would be great. I think it'd be nice to be out of the track by 4 or 5 o'clock and going for dinner and not kind of wasting the whole night away. But from a TV perspective, I feel like it's better to have it at 3 o'clock. I mean, a lot of people at home when football's going on are in front of their TV at 1 o'clock. Maybe they want to go out in the morning. Maybe they want to do something, go to church, some people, come back with some lunch. 3 o'clock. I'm good with the 3 o'clock. It ends it in kind of a twilight style, just barely under the lights. I mean, this one was different with the rain. I say leave it at 3 o'clock. Probably an unpopular opinion, but I'm good at 3:05 with it.
That's fine. We like unpopular opinions here on the podcast. I like that. So the clash, we saw that happen this past Tuesday on the road course. I think we should expect something very similar, right? Even though the whole field wasn't in that race, you still had about half the field. You still had Chase Elliott running up front, should have probably won the race. Blaney was really, really running well. Kyle Busch comes out of nowhere and wins. Truex was dominating before he wrecked. I think we should probably expect some similar things to happen this race on the road course, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very similar. I think that the bigger thing for me is going to be it might not be as exciting of a finish. I feel like the Busch clash kind of...
It's hard to live up to.
Yeah, I feel like the Busch clash kind of made us feel like every time we visit a Daytona road course, it's going to be chaotic like that. I don't know that it's going to be the same way this weekend, so I don't want people to think it's a letdown. But I think it's still going to be a pretty good race. That they've already raced there once now in a points race fashion. The clash kind of... setting everybody up as a little bit of an exhibition style race. The guys that have been in the clash and been in that points race, they better show up with their best stuff, because everybody else that's been in both are going to show up with their best stuff. And I think when it comes down to the end of the race, and I don't know about you if we're picking winners, but I'm not betting against Chase Elliott with what I've seen from him. And he had probably the best car in the clash.
Yeah.
The unfortunate circumstances there in the end, him and Ryan Blaney get together, it creates that hype moment, but
we'll get there in the last segment talking about some bets.
All right, we'll get there.
Have you heard anything about NASCAR potentially fixing the chicanes on the backstretch specifically with dirt kicking up? Because that was a real point of contention in the clash.
I haven't heard anything yet. It would probably be smart if they did do something.
I think they will. I just don't know what they do.
I can actually probably take a ride by the track and take a look.
Please do.
Look at the backstreet. No, they should fix it, though, because if that becomes a problem in the race, there's going to be more cars in the track than there was in the clash.
Yeah, big time.
Much bigger problem.
Kevin Harvick said, too, he was kind of annoyed because he said, you know, well, we told them to fix this last year when we went there, and they clearly didn't do anything or listen to us. So, I mean, this has been a problem before, and it was brought up to the sanctioning body. But I guess they haven't done anything about that. All right, let's drop the checkered and preview a little bit more with some bets. So instead of waving the white, you want to wave the checkered for us?
Checkered flag is out, ladies and gentlemen.
Checkered flag, here I come.
Davey's do's and don'ts for the week, short and sweet. Do bet on the favorites, because I think road courses all year long, Chase Elliott's not going to win all seven. He could. I don't think he will. I think he's going to win the majority of them. And Martin Truex Jr. is probably going to be the second favorite. AJ Allmendinger is going to be somebody who I'm going to talk to in my lock of the week, who's going to be contending for this week as well. So I would bet heavily on the favorites this week, because barring some unforeseen circumstances, they'll be running up front. Don't expect these race cars to look pristine and clean after the race. Because there's going to be some contact made. We saw that on the last lap of the Clash. There's going to be some dirt kicking up. We saw that throughout the entirety of the Clash. And I just think overall, road course racing, it's nowhere near short track racing. And I'm not trying to compare the two. But there are some elements within both of them that overlap, because there are some beating and banging. There is tire conservation, as we saw in the Clash, which was a welcome development, in my opinion. So I don't think that these cars are going to look clean and pristine like some do on a mile and a half race at Texas when there is one dominant lane. What do you think, Kyle?
I think that from as far as the cars looking good, they don't. I feel like the Daytona road course is one of the few road courses that NASCAR goes through that they might have to be in pretty good shape with the use to the banking and the straightaway. Yeah,
because aero is important.
Yeah, aero is going to be really important, I think, going down the backstretch, down into that little bus stop kind of chicane area, and then diving up onto that banking in turn three and coming for the front straightaway. If your car is really mangled, you're probably not going to have a chance at winning the race. But I do also think there's going to be some beating and banging at some point. These guys are going to be jumping their sides all over the place. Yeah. It could be a heck of a race from a logistical perspective, but I also I agree. I wouldn't expect every car to look perfect, but I'm going to say that the winner's car has no dents or damage on it.
Okay. All right. That's a little bit of a bold prediction. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you have a lock of the week? I'll tell you mine and give you a little bit of time to think. My lock of the week is AJ Allmendinger to lead a lap. I'm not saying that's the only lap he's going to lead. I'm not saying he's going to lead more than that. I just think it's a lock that he's going to lead at least one lap, whether that's pit strategy, whether that's on pure speed. I don't know, but it's his first Cup start since 2018 with JTG Doherty, and he's with Colleague. The car is going to be good. We know that. His skill is pristine on road courses, so that's my lock. Do you have anything off the top of your head?
My lock of the week, Michael McDowell gets a top 10 finish.
Okay. I like that. Well, you know there's going to be a lot of more eyes on him, but he's really good at road courses. Like, that doesn't change.
No, I'm guaranteeing him a top 10 finish. It wouldn't surprise me if he's in the top five, kind of competing for a win. But a top 10 finish, I'm going to say, is a lock for Michael McDowell.
So let's talk about some other potential bets that look good. Chase Elliott's the favorite at plus 200. Truex plus 280. Then the odds drop. Denny Hamlin is plus 900. Ryan Blaney, who was about to win the Clash, is plus 1,200. Then you got Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, which is interesting. He has better odds ahead of AJ Allmendinger at plus 1,600, so that may be a good bet. I'm confused as to why Kevin Harvick has better odds than guys like William Byron, Alex Bowman, Joey Logano, Matt DiBenedetto, Chase Briscoe. I mean, Michael McDowell, plus 7,500. That's some good odds if you want to bet on Michael McDowell. And no offense to Mr. Harvick, but he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire on road courses lately, especially this road course in particular. I don't know what William Hill Sportsbook's doing out here.
I think these odds are a little bit skewed. And after what happened in the Daytona 500 and knowing how good Michael McDowell is at a road course, I'm shocked that he's a plus 7,500. Look at the guys that have better odds than him. Chase Briscoe, Christopher Bell, Matt DiBenedetto, all good drivers, don't get me wrong, probably not going to win on the Daytona road course in a Cup car. I would put Michael McDowell probably, if it was up to me, about maybe a plus 1,500, somewhere around there, I think it's fair for him. But I'm also shocked, like you said, to see Kyle Larson. If he was going to be ahead of anybody, I would not put him ahead of AJ.
Not at all. Not a big long shot just for, you know what, and gigs. Quinn Huff, plus 500,000.
Probably a fair odd.
I laughed when he and Briscoe brought out a caution in the 500, and he was actually complaining about the other crap boxes. I won't say the word, but he actually called another car that word, and I thought that that was very ironic.
I'm going to leave that at that. I have no comment on that.
Yes.
I think I'll leave.
That is the right way to go. All right. Well, Kyle, this has been fun, my man. I wish we were able to see each other this past week in Daytona, but thanks to the wonderful power of Zoom, we were able to recap everything. So thanks for joining me.
Of course. Anytime. Nice to be with all the listeners, and looking forward to getting a couple of those segments to sponsor for you so you can actually read off a sponsor instead of no sponsor.
Absolutely. Well, Kyle's our wonderful social media manager, director extraordinaire at Front Stretch. So give him a follow at KSouza. Is it?
261.
Oh, 261. I was going to say 561, but I was close.
Close enough.
All right. Well, Kyle, this has been fun. Thanks for joining me. And thank you for listening to the Front Stretch Podcast, episode 3 of the new year. Hope you enjoyed the chat with Austin Cindric and our conversation about Michael McDowell's Daytona 500 upset. We'll be back next week to do it all once again at the best seat at the track on the Front Stretch Pod.